Hello, listeners. I have a special bonus episode for you today. I was recently contacted by TV legend Andrea McLean. Andrea has been working in the media for years, but recently made the decision to take her life in a different direction. And she's created an online community called This Girl Is On Fire, all about personal growth. This week is the launch of an app that accompanies it. And so I thought it'd be nice to get her on the podcast to talk a little bit about it. I hope you find what we say useful. I'll leave you to it, and I'll speak to you again soon. Ta-ra! So my special guest today is writer and broadcaster Andrea McLean. Andrea was a loose woman for well over a decade on ITV and has presented so many other shows, it'd probably take up the whole episode talking about it. She's a hugely successful household name, yet recently decided to rethink some things and practically walked away from TV work, if not literally walked away from it, in order to promote well-being and self-esteem things instead. So, Andrea, welcome to the podcast. Hello to you.
Hello to you, and thank you so much for inviting me to come and speak to you today. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
After listening to some of the things that you've been talking about and promoting, we seem to have a lot in common. We seem to be promoting some of the same things, but you are coming at things with very much, even more so than most, a lived experience of some of the things that you're trying to promote. I think what you're trying to do, which is, correct me if I'm missing the point here, but it seems to be about, I think, self-esteem, well-being, not just not positive thinking, because that can be a little bit toxic sometimes, but about thinking in general and creative thinking so that people can see other perspectives to stuff that's gone on in their life. Because you've had a few ups and downs, especially even recently, even lately, in the last few years, by the sound of things. And you're ready to share that story, I think, by the sound of it.
100%. And I think that for me, yes, I stepped away from a hugely successful media career. I'd worked on ITV daytime for 23 years. I was a journalist for many years previous to that. So I had, you know, a quarter of a century of experience in interviewing people, obviously, whether it's in print, so it's slightly quieter behind the scenes, or on screen interviewing amazing people like Oprah Winfrey and Michael Bublé and huge stars, and traveled the world and did the kind of things that, you know, everyone is scrabbling in the indoor, and yet I walked out the back door, which many people thought was a crazy thing to do. But I think for me, it was a culmination of so many personal and professional things where I just felt that, yes, you're right, and I have had many bumps in the road. My instinct throughout my whole life has always been to help. I've been like this since I was young. And if I've ever had an experience and I've gained some knowledge through that experience, whether it's whether life has taught me a lesson or a professional has taught me a lesson, it's been to pay it forward. And I got to a point, and I think many people listening will appreciate this if they're of an age, when you get to your 50s, something changes and you think, right, I'm at a point now where I know I most likely have less time left than I've had here. How do I want to spend the rest of that time? And I realized I wanted to bring together all the skills that I had, but also just this built-in passion that I have for paying it forward. So for me, and I say it to my community all the time, because I run it's called a mindset app. And basically it is all about, you know, your mindset, which we'll get into later. And I say to them all the time, all I am is 10 steps ahead of you. I've walked in your shoes. I've been where you are. I am only 10 steps ahead. And the difference is I'm building the bridge ahead of you so you can come and walk with me. And I'm fortunate enough because of my position, because I'm privileged enough because of my background and everything else, I get access to the most amazing experts. And all I do is bring them to you and interview them for you. And while I'm learning, I'm just passing it on, passing it on, passing on. I'm just the vehicle. And for me, I think it is very powerful if you come at it from learned experience, because one, there's empathy there rather than just sympathy. And also you the most powerful tool you can have is also a sense of humor, because, oh my gosh, life is a bumpy experience. And that's the point. And I think once you appreciate that you can't have this kind of toxic positivity of, you know, straining to achieve this feeling of everything is awesome all the time. And actually, once you breathe out and realize, no, there's going to be days where things are really quite dreadful and really awful, whether something's happened to you or whether it is a medical thing and it's a depressive state that you've entered. It is all part of it. And what I do is I'll give you tools to get you either through this bump in the road. And sometimes it's a bump like that, and sometimes it's a dip. And all I do is pass it on.
Mm. And that's a far better experience of what somebody might call a midlife crisis.
Mm. It's a midlife reset. And I think, you know, we've become so used to the term midlife crisis because really it's come about through lazy journalism, because it's such an easy headline. And you take, you know, anyone who has come to a point in midlife and they've changed their mind about where they are, and we've bracketed it as a weakness. Why on earth is it a weakness? Well, who says that you need to, you know, make a decision based in your teens and your 20s, and this is the life I'm going to lead, when you only have a tiny amount of knowledge and experience at your fingertips? Surely it's more foolish to stay on that path once life and experience and knowledge has broadened your perspective, and yet you choose to stay where you are. Surely it's wise to step off that path and think, no, actually, I'm going to go in this direction. And I wish that the media would catch up with this idea and stop calling it a midlife crisis, because it's a midlife reset, and it can be such a joyous and powerful thing, and it should be embraced.
I love that, the idea of rebranding the midlife crisis into a midlife reset. And it all comes down to those same foundations we were talking about, that if you can find a reason in your life to stop and think and gain some perspectives, and your perspective on, well, it looks like I'm halfway through my life, what am I going to do with the rest of it? Has what I've done up till now been my goals? Have I been acting as part of my values or the values that have been placed on me by society or through culture or through the media? And by the sound of things, you had that reset. Did you have that reset earlier than some people because of some experiences? Or was it pretty much, you know, this is my midlife reset point?
Well, I've been very lucky in that I've always had a really good mindset, and I consider myself very blessed that I was born this way. And what I mean by that is I can remember as far back as being probably about 9 or 10. And
this was in Glasgow.
I was in Trinidad at the time. So although I was born in Glasgow, my parents are from Glasgow. My whole family is from Glasgow. And you'll hear by my accent, she doesn't sound like she's from Glasgow. That's because my parents moved abroad when I was really little. Actually, they were abroad before I was born, came back to Glasgow to have me, and then moved away again. And I also grew up in various parts of the world, so I moved around a lot. And I think it was also through that experience of my dad's job, I changed schools every couple of years. I went to 9 schools by the time I was 17 in many different countries and also parts of the UK. And I can remember, like I say, as far back as being sort of 9 or 10, when something happened or an opportunity came my way that would have meant a difficult decision, do I do this or do I not do this? I can really vividly remember asking myself, when I'm an old lady, will I wish I had done this? And I would, if the answer was yes, then I'd do it. Even if it was a hard thing to do or a scary thing to do, if it was like, you know, am I going to do some public speaking or be in a school play or play in a competition or do sports day, you know, whatever was relative to me at that age. And I always had that mindset of projecting forward and asking myself the question. And no one ever taught me it. I just did it from when I was little. And I've done it through my whole life. So when I talk about a midlife reset, I've almost constantly reset throughout my life, whether it's been, you know, I've been unfortunate enough to be in some damaging relationships. And whilst I stuck with them for a period of time, because it felt like so-called the right thing to do because of society and my parents' expectations and everything else, at each time, and I was unfortunate it happened to me twice, I did get to a point where I think when I'm older and I look back, will I wish that I had stayed or would I wish that I'd left? And the answer is always really clear. So for me, resetting has happened almost constantly. And again, I say to my community, sometimes you don't need to come to someone for advice. You have the advice, you have the answers inside you anyway. And the quickest way to know sometimes is to flip a coin. And you don't need to say, well, heads, I'll do this and tails, I'll do that. You know when the coin is in the arc and midair, you know which way you actually want it to land. And once it lands, don't even pay attention to which way up it was. Ask yourself, when it was at that arc in the air, what did your heart tell you, what direction you wanted it to end in? That's what you need to do. Yeah. So I've kind of done that constantly. In terms of, did it happen for me at a certain point for a certain reason? Yes, at 49, I took part in a TV show called SAS Who Dares Wins. I don't know if you know that program. Have you heard of it?
Yeah.
It's bonkers.
Yeah.
It's a crazy program. So I was asked to do it, and I turned it down three times, because that's what a sane person would do, because it's a ridiculous program. It's a program on Channel 4 where basically SAS, ex-SAS Marines and soldiers that come from obviously the RAF and the Army, Navy, what have you. They put you through your paces, they kidnap you, they put a bag on your head and subject you to all kinds of mental stress and physical duress to see what you're made of. And at the time when I was asked to do it, it's the first time they'd asked celebrities, and it was the first time they'd ever asked women to be on board. So at the time, I was the oldest person who'd ever done it, and I was in the first group of women to ever do it. And I asked myself, when it came to me three times, I thought that there's clearly a reason why this keeps coming back into my life. And I realized it was because I was halfway through, not halfway done. Because even though at 49, technically, I could be halfway through my life, I'm not halfway done yet. There could be something that I'm going to find out about myself if I do this program. I'm clearly not going to win, because I know I'm the oldest person taking part. I know I'm not physically the strongest, and but I don't know mentally whether I'm the strongest. So I said yes to it. And that program literally changed my life, because it literally opened a box in my head that I'd kept in, like many of us do, many experiences that I'd had in my life. And I just thought, I'm going to push that down and not think about that anymore, because I'm not there anymore. So I don't need to look at it. And within hours, it was like the box flew open and all the bats came out, and I couldn't get them back in. So for me, that was my turning point. And it took about a year of processing all the bats that had flown out. And I ended up having a breakdown. Best thing that ever happened to me. Because what it made me do was look in the face of the things that I hadn't wanted to look at. And that made me then, at that point, have a total midlife reset. It just happened to happen at midlife. It could have happened to me at other points in our life. And I think I was very, very fortunate that I was forced to look at things that I didn't want to look at. Because I'd say 99% of us think that not looking at something is the answer to it. Whereas you know in your professional capacity that it's not.
I think it could have been so easy for you to fall into some of the traps that a lot of other people do when they experience that breakdown. And you use that word breakdown, and it's been around in popular culture for a long time, the idea of a nervous breakdown. And what people have meant by that is probably what we talk about nowadays as burnout. You took on too much. It was just relentless, day after day, week after week, month after month. And it wasn't just one thing after another. It would have felt like one thing on top of another. And that TV show opened that box and let out all those bats. And like you say, I just can't get those back in again. I've seen now what's really going on for me. And I wonder what other people's, what our listeners, what the equivalent would be for them, what their SAS Who Dares Wins experience would be when they can notice that there's an alternative way of thinking, alternative ways of being, alternative ways of feeling. And I know there's an element of privilege and luck that can come from a lot of experiences. And I'm never going to say to somebody who's working 7 days a week, struggling to make ends meet, that all they've got to do is just change their mindset, just change the way they think about it, and, you know, their life is going to change forever. But somebody's will. Somebody's will. Now, when I was a kid, my mum always used to tell me that I was lucky. And it wasn't that I was lucky that I always found these pound coins on the floor and 50p pieces and things. It wasn't because I was lucky. It was because I was looking. I would walk outside the pubs looking for change on the floor outside the chip shops where people had been staggering around, taking their hands out of the pockets, and they drop all their change. You've only got to find one that wants and go, ah, people drop money there. I'll keep looking there and going back every few days and looking for more money. It didn't make me a millionaire, and that's fine. But that process of just keep looking for the opportunities, whatever those opportunities are, so that you don't burn out. Maybe we do need to listen to our body and listen to the communication that our unconscious, our emotional brain is trying to tell us. And sometimes it is telling us this relationship isn't good, or it's telling us this job is damaging you. This isn't where you want to be. And then we need to look at what I think would be the sunk cost fallacy. And that seemed to have happened with you. I don't know whether you've ever stumbled across that phrase, the sunk cost fallacy, about how much we invest in something, not based on its value in our mind now, but just on how much time we've invested in it in the past. Oh, I've been 10 years in this relationship, but it's not going well, but I'd better invest another 10 years in it, otherwise those previous 10 years have no value. And that's not what's going on. You know, you'd have had those 10 years anyway. If something needs to end, it needs to end one way or another. And you've had that experience a couple of times by the sounds of things and learned from it, so that when you did then have that sort of burnout breakdown experience, you were able to see, but I know how to think critically and think creatively. And that's from a lifetime of experiences. Well done.
Well, thank you. And I think, you know, people say to me, you know, I'm 52 now, and people say to me, oh, you've learned so much in the past few years, and you know, I've trained now. I'm a coach, and so to me, what that means is I've taken the learnings that I've had, whether they're life learnings, but also a lifelong interest. You know, I'm in my office at the moment, and my library is that way, and when I look, I've been interested in how we think and behave since my 20s. And I've been reading the science behind it, reading the psychology behind it, and just kind of absorbing that on an academic level, I suppose. But isn't it interesting that we can know as much as we know? We never apply it to ourselves. We do it all the time. It's not about the knowing. It's about the doing. It's about the applying. And for me, when I had my experience, I did what we all do, which was, I didn't want to look at what was happening. I didn't want to recognize what was happening. And we've all done this, whether it's in our relationships, whether it's in our job, whether it's in our physical health. And we know we're not physically healthy. We know we're not strong. So we put our blinkers on and we don't look at it. What I did was I tried to make myself busier and busier and busier so that, well, I just don't have time. There's no way I can possibly change anything now. Look how busy I am. And I think that women in particular do this a lot. We equate busyness with doing the right thing, and you're not. You're just filling your time. And I was reading a lot of books and listening to a lot of very, what I see now is very male perspective and male driven. And the reason I separate this is because I do think men have a slightly different way of looking at things. Podcasts and interviews, and they were saying, if you don't succeed, it's because you don't want it enough. If you're not knocking it out the park, it's because you're not working hard enough. And I thought, but I do want to do well. So I was getting up at 5 in the morning, 5:30. I was in the gym. I was pushing hard. I was training hard. I was at work before anyone else. I was leaving last. I was doing interviews and cabs on the way home and writing up articles on the train. And no one was working harder than I was. But deep down, I knew I was doing it because I didn't want to think. I didn't want to actually look inside until the only way I can describe it was I felt like I was starting to short circuit. It was, if you see in a movie and you see a robot starting to zzz, it's just starting to slightly malfunction. That was what my brain felt like. And sometimes it would almost be like an out of body experience where I was so exhausted and so full and ignoring every signal that my body was sending me to just stop. that I felt lightheaded, my fingers would tingle. I just refused to listen until one day I was fortunate enough that a friend of mine literally stood in front of me like Wonder Woman in front of a speeding train, held her hand out and just went,
Stop.
I don't know what it is you think you're doing, but I can see it in your eyes. You're not well. You need to just stop. And it was like someone had punctured a water balloon. I just went whoosh. And I was so relieved that someone had actually called me out. I thought I'd been so clever and hiding it from everyone else. And I went home that day. I was actually at work when it happened. And I said to my husband, we need to talk. And I told him everything that I'd been feeling. And he was devastated because he's a really good man. And he's also a very aware man. We're both very into our personal growth. We're sensitive people. We're aware of each other. And he couldn't understand how he hadn't seen it. And for a partner hearing that someone that they love has been going through something like this, they hadn't seen any of the signs. It's really very difficult. But where we're fortunate enough is that we had the awareness to say, right, we need to go and see outside help with this. So we had counseling. And the first thing we did was we went once together, explained the situation. And then I had about 6 or 7 sessions on my own, where basically a really brilliant woman helped me put my bats back in the box or let them go. You know, the ones that needed to go back, they went back. The ones that needed to go, you know, just let them go. And I came to terms with things in my past that I hadn't done before. And then we had sessions together. And this is where it was really, really important, because we needed to learn how to tell each other things and send signals in a way that the other would understand. So we learned things like, obviously, communication. You know, what does communication even mean? We learned how to argue better. Now, that might sound like a really strange thing for a loving couple to go and do, but we did. We learned what our signals are in terms of, they're starting to get a bit annoyed by this, so I'm going to step back a little bit. Or, for example, I tend to follow him around going, yeah, but we're not done yet. Yeah, but hang on a minute, what did you actually mean by that? Whereas he's running away going, we're finished, we're done, this is finished now. And what we learned was both of those actions come from fear and love. For me, it was, I love him and I'm fearful that if this doesn't get properly sorted right down to the last molecule. I've been in relationships before where you end up treading on eggshells, and I couldn't bear it if that was how our life was going to be. Whereas in his previous relationship, if someone was following him around, they're poking him because they want a bigger fight. So once we realized our behaviors came from fear and love, and actually we're not deliberately trying to wind each other up by either walking away or following, we were able to just breathe out. And we were talking about it just yesterday, actually, that once we know, do you know what, one of us go for a walk in that direction, one go for a walk in that direction, and then we'll come back and we'll talk to each other sort of rationally. That's how we can work. And that comes through, going back to what you said at the very beginning, learned experience through having, I don't even see them as failed relationships. They were just relationships that we weren't compatible, and it didn't work out. Society puts so much blame on people if a relationship doesn't last for 57,000 years. Sometimes it's not meant to be that way. Sometimes it could be the worst thing that ever happened to you, and be thankful and grateful that you're out of it. And sometimes it worked for a time, but what got you here is not going to get you there, so you can part ways. I'm just really lucky now that I'm with someone who we are on the same page when it comes to this sort of thing. But that's come through both of us having learned experience.
And what you want to do next, by the sound of it, is start sharing the wisdom that you've gained from those experiences with a wider reach. And we live in the 21st century now. I mean, I've been doing this podcast for, when did I start this? 2010. So it'd be 12 years now, which is a lot of episodes over the years. And that's changed. It's morphed as the years have gone on. It's had kind of different themes and formulas as the years have gone on. As I have developed, the very first incarnation of this back in 2010 was just called Motivate Yourself. And it was just about me being Tigger from Winnie the Pooh, just bouncing around and trying to be enthusiastic. And it worked for a little while, and it got me lots of fans and followers, and they're still around here, plus all the extra ones I've gathered over the years. we have opportunities to share so much. But a lot of the time, people don't realise that their voice deserves to be heard, that the content they've got is actually valuable. And what you've done lately is recognised, not only do I have a story to tell, but I know how to source the people who do and can share more and more and more with people at a time when mental health is underfunded. In the UK, the NHS is really, really struggling. Everybody's got a waiting list. Even private therapists have got a waiting list. I've got a 1 year to 18 month waiting list to see me for private therapy. For private therapy, let alone people who need help via the NHS because of the cost of living crisis. People need affordable help. And if there's anything that we can do to promote well-being and promote anybody's content that can help, then it's kind of unethical to not, as far as a therapist is concerned. And I preach to all the therapists I know to go, we should be making content for people. We know stuff. But it means putting your hand in the air or putting your head above the parapet, really, and going, okay, here's my stuff, but you can shoot me and I've got to be okay with that.
Yeah.
And that's not easy, to put yourself out there and say, shoot me, go for it. But that's what you're going to do now?
It is. And I've been running This Girl Is On Fire for 4 years now. And it started off as an online blog because, again, of my journalism background and being really fortunate to meet experts and saying to them, can you write an article for me on whatever? And I see it very much as mental wellness in the same way as physical wellness. So it started off as a free online blog, but then it very quickly grew. And because I care, I would only ever put out content that I trust and I know is good because it's got my face on it. So, you know, I've got my reputation to think of. But while it was free to everyone else, it wasn't free to me to run. And it ended up, it did contribute to me having the breakdown because it was one of the things that I was just worrying, getting busier and busier, trying to keep together. And I thought, right, it is all very well me putting this stuff out there and wanting to help. But if I fall down and then it stops, I don't help anyone. How do I do this in a way that actually it can become a business that can run and run and run that helps everyone who's involved with it? So I decided to make it into a safe space and a community. So what I've formed now is I've put it into an app. Now, when I quit my job at the end of 2020, in the middle of a global pandemic, most people thought I was mad, which when I think back on it, it was a fairly risky thing to do. And the reason that I did it was because there's only so long that you can work on something that you feel so strongly about on the side. There comes a point where you need to really put 100% of all your energy in. And I knew I wanted to make it into a safe online space and into a community. So what do I mean by that? What I decided to do with my husband, because we work together on this and it's very much an equal partnership, and we're lucky that we have a yin and yang of skill sets. I know that this, my phone, is one of our most powerful tools because it's a habit that we have. So rather than telling people to change their habits in terms of stop looking at social media, put down your phone, it's an extension of our fingers now. It is. So what can I do to take something that we're so used to having and flip it so that it becomes something that is useful and helpful and powerful? And so I wanted to create an app whereby it's a mixture of a social media platform where our social feed is purely helpful content. It's links to interviews with experts that I've done. It's masterclasses, guides, meditations. But most importantly, there's a community. So our women can put up posts on, we have like a wall of wins, which is like, do you know the jar? Do you ever do this with any of your patients where I encourage my women, just get a jar, put it in the kitchen, buy a cheap set of post-it notes. And anytime something good happens to you, write it on this post-it note and put it in the jar. And what you'll see as the weeks go on, when you're feeling nothing good ever happens to me. Just look at that jar and you're seeing it filled with little colored bits of paper. And it's a visual reminder that actually good things are happening in my life. I'm just not seeing them. So we have like a wall of wins in there. We get them to suggest a podcast that you're listening to. And what it does is it means that there's now this online space. And because it's a membership and you have to pay to be part of it, and you know, and it works out, it's around £1 a day. You know that you can post whatever you like, and no haters. No one is going to judge you. No one is going to be going, well, it's all right for you because you had a good day. I'm having a terrible day. Actually, if you post, I'm having a terrible day today, someone will jump in and go, oh, I'm really sorry to hear that. Have a listen to this. Maybe this will help you. So for me, it's been all about letting people know that I'm 10 steps ahead of you. I'm putting down these train tracks and I'm building something that I really want you to come along on the ride for me. It's got a sense of humor. It's got a twinkle in the eye. It's not therapy. It's not counseling. But what it is it's giving you tools in your toolkit so that if, for example, you have a year or 18 month wait to see someone professional to help you with your mindset in that capacity, I'm going to give you tools in the interim so that actually you realize you have so many capabilities within yourself. You just don't know where to start with it. Now, I've had people saying to me, why should I pay to join you when there's all this free stuff in the internet? And for me, that's the point. There is so much free stuff on the internet that is absolutely overwhelming. And you also have no idea whether it's good or not. Whereas you know that if you've invested in yourself by committing to, you know, give, and it's not an extortionate amount, but it is enough that you know you've committed to it. You know you're in a safe space, that anything that I offer you is trusted. And that's all I can say about it. I don't know whether it's going to work for you or not. That's kind of not in my hands, but I'm offering in the same way as when you're helping someone in your capacity. You don't know whether it's going to work or not, but all I can do is try my best and offer it up to you with my blessing.
That sounds wonderful. Certainly, I mean, I've been doing something similar through Patreon for a couple of years. And the reason for that is because I look at my waiting list and go, well, okay, if I worked an extra day a week, I could see an extra 6 or 7 people maybe. And I could help 6 or 7 people with that one day a week. Or I could spend a day a week doing online material, podcast stuff, meditations, hypnotherapy recordings, and I can help 1,000 people. And it's been really hard to look at my waiting list and go, these people really need help. I can help 6 or 7 people if I stop. There's only so much you can do as one person. But when you can curate some digital content, you can literally help thousands and thousands and thousands. And if you have the ability to do that, everybody should. I think they really should. Because not everybody's going to like my content. Not everybody's going to like your content. Not everybody's going to like Jordan Peterson or somebody else. You find the person you click with, who curates the content that you click with, and you absorb it. And you know, pass over some of the things that go, okay, that's not for me, but I understand why somebody else would. And be okay with all of that. If we can throw ourselves into personal development and some acceptance, I think, of those bad days, that acceptance of ourself that says, well, this is who I am. These are my strengths. These are my weaknesses. This is just who I am. And that is okay. I am good enough. And the more times that somebody can have those experiences, whether it's face to face with a therapist, with a friend, with a colleague, with somebody that's trusting, or with the kind of relationship that you're creating with your community. And it is a community. And that's something to be really passionate about. One thing we've known for a long time about mental health and well-being around the world is that those that have got a strong sense of community have the best foundations at overcoming depression, anxiety, even personality disorders, because they've got a safe place. And if we can create that for people, that's wonderful.
And for me, that was why it's taken us 18, 19 months to work with an app developer to get it to a point where it's now ready to launch globally. Now, I could have done things very differently and just launched either carried on with a website or simply done a podcast or what have you. But to me, because of my experience with broadcasting, you speak into a microphone or you speak into a camera and then you put it out into the ether and you have no idea where it's landing. But also, all you're doing is putting it out, and there's nowhere for people to come together to have a discussion about it.
The relationships.
Yes, and for me, it was really, really important that one, it was a safe space, and two, that people who have made the decision, right, I'm here in my journey, I'm right down at the bottom, as in I'm really not feeling very confident at the moment, or I'm feeling quite overwhelmed by everything that's happening in the world, not just globally, but just in my own house. This is where I am right now. But I know that I'm going to join people who are either further ahead and they're going to be doing exactly the same as I'm doing. Do you know what? I tried this. Have a go at this. You know, they say it takes a village to raise a child, and we've kind of forgotten that now because we all move all over the place. But you never lose that feeling of being that child who needs a village to raise you. And we're, you know, I worked in an industry for a long time where it was all about being the best, looking the best, being the shiniest, in many cases being the loudest. That's not who I am as a person. I've never really been that interested in that. I've always been about supporting and helping rather than elbowing someone in the face and being the first and the loudest and the shiniest. And if I could bring all of that and put it together into almost like a village-like scenario where there will be elders in there, there will be people at your stage in there, and there'll be people who are just coming up behind you. And again, you'll know this. The way to ingrain information into our head is not simply to learn it, but it's to do it. It's also to pass it on. There's nothing makes you feel better about yourself. It's purely selfish. Than to learn something that works and pass it on to someone else and to see that little light bulb moment in their eyes and to see them change something about their lifestyle or their behavior. It makes you feel really great about yourself. So all I do is I'm building a community of amazing women, and I watch them all the time in the app. I check this morning. I dip in and out. I check all day. And I can see them offering advice, supporting each other. And it's beautiful to see, because all I do is I start the plate spinning and they carry it on. And all I do is kind of lead, step back every now and again, make sure it's all okay, and then step back in and make sure everyone is all right. And what I love about this is our feelings are global. We are all human beings on a rock in space having a human experience. Our cultures may be different. Our environments may be different. I know people get shot down for saying, you know, we all have the same 24 hours in the day. We do, but our experience of those 24 hours is very, very different and very unique to us. But our feelings as human beings are the same. So what I'm excited about, the fact that this app obviously is now launching, and I'm known here in the UK for doing this, you know, for being this person who was on the TV. Once it goes globally, no one gives a hoot about what my job was. They care about how they feel when they're inside the app. And that's all that matters to me. I don't care what part of the world you're coming in from. And we've already started to have women joining from all around the world. Our human experience of how we feel emotions is the same.
Andrea, this is wonderful. It really, really is. And I'm really looking forward to watching what happens as this progresses and hearing more and more about it. So if anybody wants to get on board with this, it's as simple as just going to your website, andreamclean.com, I guess?
It is. And so I've tried to make it as simple as possible. And so if you Google me, Andrea McLean, andreamclean.com, you'll find it. But also just go on the App Store, look for This Girl Is On Fire. The app is there. On Google Play, This Girl Is On Fire is there. We also, I've been doing a podcast behind closed doors for my community for the past 18 months or so. And the reason I did that was I didn't want to create something in this little bubble, in this little vacuum that my husband Nick and I thought, you know what, this is a great idea. We're going to do this thing and it's going to be amazing. We've worked for the past 18 months really closely with founder members, surveying, speaking to them, literally spending hours one-on-one Zooms with our members going, what did you think about this? Do you like this? Do you want more? Do you want less? So that by the time we came to release it into the world, we knew that it works. So I'm also releasing a podcast as well at the same time as I'm releasing the app. The members always hear it first, by the way, which I think is really important. And what it is it's interviewing amazing women who I think are on fire. However, every one of them, they will have been hugely successful in their field, but you may never have heard of them. This is really important to me, to not just go down the normal famous woman interviews famous woman. Yes, of course, there are some amazing famous women in there, but they will all have been through a journey where they will have had bumps in the road. And for me, it's asking them questions about at what point to thinking differently about the situation that you're in, change the trajectory of your life. And if you didn't change the trajectory of your life at that moment, when you look back on it, how do you think differently about it? Because for me, if you can show people that actually you have the capacity to think differently about either the situation that you find yourself in right now or something that's happened in your past, maybe you're just hanging on to like a big bag of rocks, you can put things down and you can move on for them. So I'm releasing the podcast into the wild as well. And I'm really looking forward to people learning through entertainment, which is that's my background, you know. And I do have some people on my bucket list that I really do want to interview as well. I've just been listening to a podcast with Lizzo and I've now fallen massively in love with her and I want to interview her. But yes, it's not just the app that people can access. You can also listen to the podcast as well.
Wonderful stuff. That really is good. Thanks so much for doing this, because you've got something to share that can potentially, it's a bit of an exaggeration to say, you know, this can change the world, but it can certainly change somebody's world and many people's worlds. It really, really can. It genuinely can. I speak from experience. I know that it can. And you'll get some wonderful feedback that means that when you look back in the twilight hours and days of your life, you will be able to look back and think, I did all this for the right reasons and I'm proud of myself for doing so. That's really, really good. Really, really good. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you. And thank you for coming onto the podcast. It really is lovely. I'll add some links into the show notes, everybody, to find some more information about Andrea and This Girl Is On Fire, as well as some of her books as well. What's one thing we've not mentioned? That there's Andrea's written quite a few books over the years, all about sharing her experiences, her story, and there's a lot to learn from the things that she's got to say. And unlike a lot of people, she actually wrote these.
I did, every word.
She is a writer. She's a writer. So it's well worth reading. They really, really are. So Andrea, thank you very, very much again for coming on to the show. And I'll speak to you again soon.
I hope so. I've enjoyed today. Thank you so much.
You take care.